Leave her alone. Let her be. That's what Jesus says to Judas. Leave her alone. She's done a beautiful thing. She has anointed me for my burial. Now, the striking thing about this text is not that Judas protests what's happened or even how Jesus answers Judas' protest. It's the fact that Mary has chosen to anoint Jesus right now. Rather than waiting till after he has died, Mary does this beautiful act while he's still living. Mary is giving the very best that she has to give, the most expensive thing she owns, up to a year's salary to anoint him with this perfume right now. And the real waste would have been to have waited till Jesus had died, to have done this to Jesus after he was gone. But instead, she offers the best she has while he's still with her. Now, Judas's protest that this costly perfume could have been sold and given to the poor, well, it's a disingenuous protest from the get-go, since Judas was really interested in just skimming the proceeds off of the top for himself, according to the text. And so Jesus responds with a phrase that has been taken out of context ever since by those that somehow don't think the church should be caring for the poor. And we hear Jesus responding to Judas, "The poor you will always have with you, but me, not so much." As if Jesus was saying to us, in essence, don't worry about the poor. You don't have to do anything. Everything's A-okay. Just focus on yourself. What nonsense. Remember the story of the rich man and Lazarus? Why does the rich man end up going to hell in that story? Because he walked by poor Lazarus every day from his rich digs and passed by, and every day he wouldn't even stop to offer him the leftovers from his dinner table, the scraps or the meals, or what he didn't eat. That's what he does. He just ignores Lazarus, and it gets him sent to hell. So Jesus clearly isn't telling us to do nothing about the poor. So let's lay that purposeful misinterpretation to rest once and for all so that we never have to hear it again. Jesus was not telling us to ignore the poor, to do nothing for them. He was saying, Mary did a wonderful thing. Focus on that. She gave me the best gift that she had. That's what's at hand. That's the issue here. She knows he's not coming back from Jerusalem. She knows he's going to die. And she wants to let him know how much he has meant to her, how much this friendship has meant. You know, which reminds me that we should take the time every now and then to remind those people that are in our lives of how deeply we love them, how much they mean to us. Because it's so easy just to assume everybody will be around forever and ever and that they know it. Tell them. Don't let them just think it. What she did for Jesus, therefore, has implications for us today. There's a danger, you see, that churches will become museums for Jesus Christ, that our existence will look a lot like European cathedrals, where people come on Viking river cruises and other tours, and they walk in and they look at the beautiful structures and they leave, and the church in and of itself is nothing now more than a museum to what once was. In her preaching book, The Preaching Life, pastor and professor Barbara Brown Taylor tells this story of happening upon the ruins of a massive cathedral while she was hiking in the Kakar Mountains of Turkey. And after reflecting upon what she had seen of this magnificent cathedral that was now in ruins, it was once amazing. It was once an impressive structure built to honor and to glorify God in the very land that the Apostle Paul had walked during his ministries. But now it lay in utter ruins and garbage was strewn all about the grounds. If we don't attend to God's presence in our midst, if we don't begin to see that we have to bring the very best of our gifts to serving that presence in the world that we call God, we may find ourselves someday selling tickets to a museum as well. But probably not, because our buildings are not quite as grand. Think about that for a moment. We must devote all our gifts, from the smallest of the gift that we have, as long as it's our best, to the grandest and even most expensive gift, if it's our best, to serving Christ's presence in the world today. Or else we may find our churches have become like museums. They're irrelevant to the human family anymore. In other words, rather than devoting our time and our attention and our energy to merely preserving the memory of Jesus, hoping that people will believe exactly what we believe and being more concerned with dogma and doctrine than we are with the following aspect, the doing aspect of being a Christ follower. It'll be like having a deceased relative that we talk about in memoriam, but nothing that motivates us to do anything today. He was a nice guy. You know, I remember wonderful times with him. What are you doing tomorrow? And I'll give you a great example of what this could look like for us. In her blog, Small Sacrifices Make Everyday Heroes, Carolyn Rhodes writes this, which pertains to all of us, I think. She's a young woman. She's a millennial, by the way. They often get maligned. With recent school shootings, natural disasters, and war, there's been something on my mind. Would I stand up using my body as a shield to protect other people from harm, for example? When somebody is drowning, would I have the ability to pull them to safety before saving myself? Would I dare risk my life, in fact, to save somebody? She says it's hard to say, honestly answer that unless you're in the circumstances that cause that to have to happen. But it's not a bad thing, she says, to think about it. Because self-reflection, you see, is an opportunity to examine your character, the weaknesses in your character, so to speak. And if necessary, make changes in your character for the better. It might tell you, look, I would really be afraid to do that. Well, fear, we know, is not a great thing. So maybe that's a fear that should be faced. Fear can motivate us to do things that are good, but I'm talking about that fear that just pushes out faith. The Bible even touches on this in these kinds of circumstances. In John 15, for example, it states that greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Well, that's a tall order, folks. But you don't have to wear tights and have a red cape on or a crown of thorns to live a sacrificial life. There are two kinds of heroes, those who stand up in the face of tragedy, and then there are everyday heroes, people who are not called to rush into a burning building, people who are not called to throw their bodies in front of flying bullets. We can all, therefore, she says, be everyday heroes, whether we are placed in highly dangerous situations or not. An everyday hero may never make the front page of the paper. You're not going to read about them. They're the hard-working people that you and I know who never boast really about their accomplishments and rarely complain about having to do something extra for somebody else. It's just kind of a way of being for them. The everyday hero doesn't have to do something earth-shattering to earn the title either. What can be conflicting, and what the real issue is, I think, for most of us, is what does it mean to put others before ourselves, right? On an airplane, for example, they tell you to put your oxygen mask on so that you can help somebody else. It seems like good sense, right? So in sometimes, some ways, we do think of ourselves first, and then we think of others, right? And the Bible tells us to put others first. So we have to think on these things, too. Or somebody sitting next to you in everyday life. I struggle with this balance, in essence, finding the balance. But I take great comfort in the fact that I try. And you should too. I think Jesus loves the fact that we try. If he didn't, he would have condemned Peter rather than forgiven him. He would have said, you know, you're not fit to be my disciple, much less found a church on for denying him three times. He doesn't do that. So the question becomes, what do you choose? Do you choose serving yourself more often than not? Or do you choose serving others more often than not? Right? I know people who serve others almost out of a neurotic need to be liked. That's not so healthy either. Right? Because they become like martyrs, the poor me's. Look at me, poor me. But I'm doing all this for everybody else. How come nobody knows? That's not a healthy thing either. Many people are caught up, you see, in a crisis. And they say that when they're in that crisis, they have this natural instinct to save others, which I hope is true. I hope that we really don't have to think that diligently and hard about seeing a small child in a burning building and not think about just running in. I hope that is our natural instinct. But if it is our natural instinct to do that, shouldn't that play out in our everyday lives too? In other words, when the building isn't on fire, shouldn't we be looking out for one another? So how can we become heroes without a life or death situation at hand, therefore? And what she writes is this. She says, through daily sacrifices that you make to others every single day, from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed. By choosing to put somebody else's needs before your own in everyday life, for example, for me means letting somebody cut in front of me in traffic. I absolutely hate that. But it does. And when I do it and I practice it, I'm a much happier person. I'm not as aggressive about, oh, I've got to beat this person now like I'm in a race, right? It means forgiving somebody, and we do this all the time to one another. We don't mean to, but it means forgiving somebody who says something thoughtless or rude because maybe their day is just going in a sideways direction. And normally they're nice, but they just say something that's off color or off-putting, and it means forgiving them for it, letting them have their moment of sin, if you want to call it that, because you know you're going to have your moment. It means letting somebody else take credit for the things that often you would like to take credit for. Why? Because the more that other people make it their own, the better for the whole body, right? I hope that ideas that I have become ideas that you own and think are yours. That would be wonderful. If you're choosing to put somebody else's needs before your own, that attitude of service is fulfilling in and of itself, because choosing to put yourself after others proves this to other human beings. Even the smile to the stranger on the sidewalk that you walk by, it proves that you have honor and worth and dignity to those around you. It shows that you care instantaneously. Betty was telling me that, you know, she likes to walk around the streets when she's out and about and say hi to people that she doesn't even know, and sometimes it shocks them. Right? They don't know what to do with that. What's wrong with you? But most of the time, it gives people a warm feeling and they smile back. They're caught off guard in a nice way. And I think that's what it means to be an everyday hero, those kinds of little acts. And then over time, you might have the opportunity to do a big act. You don't know what God's going to call to put in your way. But if you're not practicing now, daily, you might not be ready when the big call comes. Our world doesn't need people, you see, with superhuman powers to save us from ourselves. Doesn't need Captain America. Doesn't need Thor. Doesn't need Batman or Robin, though I love those folks and I love watching the cartoons. It just needs everyday heroes like us right here in the pews. Mary gave Jesus that day the very best that she had. The very best she had. And I'm sure she couldn't just run out to a store and buy another year's worth of perfume after she gave this away. I'm sure that cost her, so to speak. But she was an ordinary person, like you and like me, who did a very cool thing that day for Jesus. Quite simply, she was an everyday hero. May the good news be clear today that all of you, all of us, God's children, have gifts to offer from the least to the greatest. So be gracious and loving, therefore. Be imitators of God, says the Apostle Paul. Be imitators of Mary, I would add. Be imitators of Peter. Be imitators of Jesus. Be imitators of those that you see in our midst who do it too. In them you will see the true nature of God, whose extravagance is beyond measure. Amen.